the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, we have a new president-elect that'll be assuming office in January of next year. And with that will come some changes to the tax laws. Republicans have had plans in the works for years and have been unable to pass them. Well, the new president-elect says tax reform is on the top of the agenda. Well, what is this going to mean for estate planning? Joining me on the program is Adam Sherry from the estate firm of Anderson & Yoakum. And Adam, why don't we begin with the laws the way they are now, and what will change, if anything, in 2017 prior to any tax law proposals coming from the president-elect?
You know, that's a great question because, you know, I know that I've been getting a lot of questions, and some of the concerns from some of our clients is that, you know, they're going to have to worry about this as of January 1. And what's nice is to know that we have some time to plan. So the law is pretty much already set as far as 2017 is concerned. And it's not a huge change from what we saw during 2016. So there was a minor increase in the exemption amount that people can give either during life or upon death. So this is an exemption from the estate tax.
Adam, what is that new number? Because I know it was like $5,450,000 for 2016. What is it for 2017?
So it's $5,490,000.
Okay, so $40,000 more, sounds like. So that doesn't change. What about the annual gifting of $14,000? Has that changed?
No, we did not see an increase in the annual gifting amount. So it remains at $14,000.
Adam, you know, one of the issues looking at the Republican tax plan and also looking at Trump's tax plan, in addition to lowering taxes, he's also talking about doing away with estate taxes, which would help preserve a lot of family businesses and farms. But one of the things he also talked about doing is getting rid of the stepped-up basis in costs. So, two questions. Number one, explain for our listeners what the stepped-up basis in cost is. And then let's talk about the implications and who does it apply to?
Yeah, so this is going to be a pretty big change for certain parts of the population. And then for other parts of the population, they aren't going to see a major change. So just to kind of start at the top in response to your first question, currently all assets receive a step up in basis upon an individual's death. So for instance, if stock in Apple was purchased in 1990, for $10,000, it's going to have a basis of $10,000. Now, that same stock may be worth $100,000 upon that individual's death. So there's going to be a gain of $90,000 that may be subject to a capital gains tax. However, because of the step up in basis that currently exists, the value of those stocks gets stepped up to the $100,000. So that's the current fair market value. And if an individual were to sell that the day after, let's say a parent died, they're not going to be subject to any tax on that $90,000 in gain.
You know, Adam, just for our listeners, this was put into effect with Ronald Reagan, because when Reagan came in, first the exemption back then was $175,000 and the tax rates at death were 70%. The problem was, as heirs had to sell off assets to pay the estate taxes, they would sell off assets with capital gains, and so they get hit with another tax. And so that was put into place to protect this double taxation at death. Now, let me ask you this. If he's talking about doing away with that, who would that apply to? Are there levels that the step up would apply to, or is this applied to just about everybody, which would, quite honestly, impact quite a few people?
If it applied across the board, that would cause major problems for people when they're dealing with the sale of a family home or other assets that have potentially been held by a parent or a grandparent for, you know, decades, let's say. However, Trump's proposal actually proposes an exemption for the first $10 million. So while he's proposing eliminating the estate tax on everything and proposing eliminating the step-up in basis, he makes an exception in the proposal so that the first $10 million of an individual's estate would still be eligible for that step-up. So currently, with an estate tax exemption amount of, you know, approximately $5.5 million per person, if an individual died, let's say, or a couple, and they had a $10 million estate, currently they're not subject to the estate tax and they get a full step up in basis. Under Trump's proposal, the estate tax is going to be eliminated, so they're not going to be subject to the estate tax, and their first $10 million in assets is still going to get the step up in basis that everybody's really used to. So, you know, the whole section of the population within the state under $10 million isn't going to see a real change under the proposed new estate and gift tax plan.
Well, it seems to me what he's doing here is protecting the family business, because let's say I have a family business. Let's say the business is worth $50 million. Under the laws as they stand right now, I could shelter, let's say, $11 million of that, but then I would have close to $40 million that would be subject to, what is it, 40% or 45% tax rate. So a good portion of that business, I would have to do something. Otherwise, that business could go away. In other words, a lot of businesses aren't very liquid because the value of the business is based on, let's say, sales or the cash flow or the assets in the business. So what this would do is protect the business, but if the heirs eventually want to sell it down the road, they're going to get hit with the capital gains tax. And by the way, he wants to lower the capital gains tax to 20% or 15%. There's two different plans there, so who knows where that's going to end up. Any implications for larger businesses? Let's say I'm Larry Lots of Bucks and my business is worth $50 million. But let's say I made it because I was kind of like a Warren Buffett. I invested appropriately. I have real estate that's appreciated, or, you know, I bought Apple stock or Facebook and I have appreciated assets. So the heirs, one way or another, are going to have to pay some kind of tax.
Yeah, they will have to pay some sort of a tax. But I feel like this individual that you're describing really is kind of the focus of these sorts of changes. And, you know, lessening the negative impact of taxes on that sort of individual appears to be the goal, because as you identified, the capital gains tax rate, both the current and the proposed, and we both know that a lot of these details are going to kind of have to be hashed out, but we know that the long-term capital gains tax rate is significantly lower than the estate tax rate. It's approximately half. So we're seeing a major reduction in tax on that particular segment of the population. And as you identified, that's going to have real implications for the ability of those family businesses to continue operating profitably. And, you know, in some certain circumstances, it may mean the difference between being able to continue to operate the business or having to dismantle or sell it off in order to satisfy certain, you know, tax requirements.
So what would be some of the tax planning tools? Would it make sense, for example, let's take the example of that $50 million, Larry Lots of Bucks. Larry's assets are in appreciated real estate, appreciated stock. So we don't have any estate taxes that are going to have to be paid. But let's say the basis on a lot of these investments are so low that there's a 20% tax. Is this going to rule out, Adam, the use of charitable trust, which have been used to avoid capital gains?
You know, I don't think it's going to. And I've thought about this and I've talked with some other people, because the Internal Revenue Code as it stands right now allows certain carve-outs where it will exempt certain assets even from the imposition of the capital gains tax. So, you know, we were talking about it in an estate tax perspective a moment ago, but even now, the Internal Revenue Code wants to encourage people to make certain charitable donations and other charitable bequests. So they'll actually ignore the capital gains tax and give a full exemption at the fair market value rate. And so that can be a real benefit to individuals as they're looking at their portfolio of assets and trying to identify a way that they can, you know, support a cause that they believe in or make a charitable contribution of some means. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see exactly how it shakes out. But because I think the Internal Revenue Code is going to continue to encourage that sort of giving, I don't think it's going to wipe it out as a whole.
Okay, so around this time of the year, this is when people think about making charitable donations and, you know, giving to charity. You see the ads on television that are appealing to that. So in your estimation, even though you know, as we take a look at capital gains as they stand right now, I can take my own state that you and I live in, which is California. If you have 20% capital gains tax, plus you add Obamacare tax of 3.8, there's 24. And if you're Larry Lots of Bucks, you have 13.3% tax here in California. So you're still talking about over 37% in capital gains tax. That's still a lot of money. So it seems to me, Adam, the charitable trust would still make a lot of sense here.
Yeah, I agree. That is a very significant tax. And I don't think the charitable trust is going anywhere, not just because people continue to want to, you know, make a contribution to their favorite charity or cause, but also because the tax structure and the government is going to want to continue to encourage that sort of charitable giving. And so, you know, when you identify the fact that by choosing certain assets, you can avoid a significant amount of tax and make a real impact, I don't think by any means that these potential changes are going to result in the end of charitable giving or the effectiveness of different instruments as far as, you know, different types of charitable trust.
And Adam, this is the thing that concerns me. And we saw this with Ronald Reagan, because I remember when I got in the business, we had tax shelters. Literally, a person could walk into my office in the month of December. I could compute what their taxes are, do a 2-to-1 or a 3-to-1 tax write-off, and zero out their taxes. Well, they got rid of all those kind of things, the deduction of sales tax in the Tax Reform Act of 1986. In exchange for getting rid of all these write-offs and deductions and tax shelters, Reagan brought the tax rate down from 50% to 28%, phased in over a three-year period. The deductions were eliminated in year one. Well, we had 1 year at 28% tax rates in Reagan's fourth year of office. George H. Bush comes in the next year and raises the tax rates to 31%. Then Clinton comes in and raises them to 39.6. So, Adam, what's to stop them? And because you and I have been in this business long enough to see that estate taxes, gift taxes have been a political football. So let's say they get rid of the estate taxes, they reinstitute the tax of capital gains at death when the heirs sell the asset in exchange for getting rid of the estate tax, and then later on another administration comes in and goes, oh, by the way, we're going to put back in the estate tax.
There's absolutely nothing to stop that from happening. And the piecemeal approach, which you just identified, is one of the ways in which it can become a real issue. So, you know, it could be that, exactly like you're saying, so they leave the imposition of the capital gains tax on death, which, you know, was paired with the elimination of the estate tax, you know, so they could just leave that and then reimpose the estate tax. So one of the really important things to acknowledge is that when these laws are passed, if and when they're passed, they're really only set in stone until the next administration comes in or until the political winds start changing, because they could really be reimposed at any point after they're really established.
Because I know that President Barack Obama, in his State of the Union speech, has mentioned he wanted to go after and reinstate the taxation of assets for capital gains at death. And that was a stated goal. So this could be a Trojan horse, because it sounds like everybody, oh, great, there's no estate taxes. Let's assume, Adam, that they do that. Let's say they come in, they pass the tax law, they get rid of the estate tax. Now, in its place, they put in the capital gains tax at death on appreciated assets. What should an individual do in planning? Because as you just mentioned, if they get rid of the estate taxes, that's only as good as the next administration or a change in Congress.
Yes, and we keep talking about the estate tax, and that's exactly what it's referred to. And so oftentimes we just kind of jump towards the tax that's imposed on death. Now, however, in addition to eliminating the tax on death, the tax on lifetime transfers is likely to be eliminated. They kind of go hand in hand. So this kind of $5.5 million exemption that we're talking about, that's a combined exemption amount. That's combined lifetime transfers and at-death transfers. So during this period, let's say it's 4 years, or let's say it's 7 years or 8 years, when we know that there's going to be no lifetime transfer tax and no at-death tax, the only thing that you can really count on during that period is being able to take advantage of the absence of a tax on a lifetime transfer. So your listeners, if they're interested in taking advantage of something before they know it's going to change, we both know that they can't plan or know when they're going to pass away. And I mean, we hope that they live well beyond the next several administrations. So one of the ways to take advantage of this law, while it is in effect, is to look towards making a lifetime transfer to something like an irrevocable trust.
So if they do that to an irrevocable trust, how can they still maintain control of the assets and yet keep it out of the estate? In other words, we transfer it, but let's just take Larry Lots of Bucks, and let's just assume he's got $11 million and most of it is an appreciated real estate or it's appreciated stock, Apple, Facebook, or whatever it is. The couple wants to make a transfer because they know that the tax laws can change. So if they get rid of the estate tax laws and gift tax, they can make that transfer. But what if they need to live off those assets? How can you transfer the assets out of the estate and still have some control or at least have access to income?
This is the real important point to focus on, because while Larry is going to be focused on avoiding the estate tax, of course, he doesn't want to impoverish himself to the point where, just as a means of avoiding the estate tax, he has now made it difficult for he and his wife to live for the next 30 years that they're going to be alive. So one of the important things to remember also is that Larry, to a large degree, is responsible for, you know, the accumulation or appreciation of those assets. So, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be a great idea for Larry to totally relinquish all control of them, because, you know, he's likely the one who knows how to work with his financial advisor or knows how to keep an eye on that appreciated real property or whatever it may be to make sure that it remains productive or sell it when it starts to look down. So this irrevocable trust isn't the same thing as just cutting off all ties. Basically, you're imposing a certain set of restrictions on yourself. So for instance, you know, once it's transferred into that trust, you know, Larry may lose the ability to totally change the distribution scheme after he dies. However, he retains the ability to continue to receive income from that property, to continue to use that property for his health, education, maintenance, and support, all of his basic standard of living stuff. And he also will likely retain the ability to pay attention to what's actually in his portfolio. So he continues to be the person who is able to guide his own estate and the allocation of his assets. However, you know, the individual who's helping him establish the irrevocable trust is paying close attention to the restrictions that have to be there per the Internal Revenue Code. However, you know, to kind of think of it in terms of, you know, Larry's just handing this over and is no longer connected to it is really not the case.
You know, if there's any piece of advice, Adam, and I think you would back me up on this, that we would want to give the listeners to this show, is it used to be, at least when I first got in the business after Reagan changed the tax laws, it was one and done. You put your estate plan in effect, and that was pretty much it. The exemption remained pretty much the same. The tax rates remained pretty much the same. The stepped up basis remained the same. There wasn't much change. And then all of a sudden, towards the end of Reagan's administration, every single administration that has come in after Reagan, George Bush came in senior, he changed the tax laws. Clinton came in, he changed the tax laws. George W. Bush came in, changed the tax laws. Obama came in, changed the tax laws. Now Trump is coming in to change the tax laws. The one constant, it seems to me, with the state planning is change itself.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, just one more thing to kind of empower some of your listeners with respect to that particular point is, you know, as much as your advisors care about you and are really interested in your well-being, it's also not, like, legally speaking, nor is it common practice for them to take responsibility to update you about all these different changes, you know. And so part of that's cultural. In your practice, I know it's different because you're able to maintain a regular relationship with your clients, and that's very much welcomed by your clients. However, in my practice, people got into this mindset that you referenced of the kind of the one and the done approach, where we've executed our documents, we are going to be good, hopefully for the rest of our lives. And so this has created a culture, at least in the legal aspects of estate planning, where we don't proactively contact our clients every single time there's a change. So clients need to keep that in mind and realize that they may need to be the one to pick up the phone and check in with their estate planning attorney if they don't receive some sort of a letter or an update or something like that.
Yeah, because just from what I've seen, and I've studied the Republican plan, the Trump plan, we are going to be going through major planning with our larger clients next year, because there's an opportunity, but there's also, when you have a president that comes in and reinstitutes basically the capital gains tax at death if assets are sold and gets rid of estate taxes, I mean, that warrants a new estate plan. And as much as people, you know, hate to think about it, I mean, that's probably for most people, they don't sit around the house thinking about their estate plan constantly. But, you know, this is something that next year is going to be a big year of tax law changes. And for anybody out there that has appreciated assets, has a significant amount of assets, my advice, and Adam, I think you'd back me up, is contact your advisor, estate planner, because there's an opportunity here.
I absolutely agree.
Any final thoughts as we end the year? You know, this is typically the time of the year that people think about making charitable gifts. Any parting comments you would like to add?
So I would just like to end on a positive note. And so, you know, we talked about a lot of changes, but one of the great things that we've seen as a constant is that different advisors out there have been able to look at these changes and find ways in which, you know, if we can't fix the problem, we can definitely mitigate the negative effects of it. So as concerning as parts of this may be, it's not all doom and gloom, and we'll figure out how to deal with it. But I'm looking forward to seeing what these changes are going to look like. If I could say one thing about end of the year charitable giving, I think one of the most important things to keep in mind is, number one, don't forget the deadline. These gifts must be completed by midnight on December 31st. And number two, there's a difference between charitable giving that is considered eligible for a deduction and just altruistic giving. So, you know, while sharing money with somebody who may be in need is an excellent example of altruistic giving, it's not necessarily deductible as far as the IRS is concerned. So if you're looking to make a deductible charitable gift, make sure that they are an eligible organization. And so you could check charitynavigator.org or the IRS EO Select Check online. And in addition to the organizations that will be identified, religious institutions are also considered eligible organizations, even if they don't appear on those searches.
Well, listen, Adam, if any of our listeners would like to contact you regarding estate planning, how could they do so?
The best way would be to go through our website at andersonyocum.com. That's Anderson, Y-O-C-U-M.com.
Well, listen, Adam, thanks for joining us on the program, and happy holidays to you and a happy new year.
Happy New Year's to you as well. Thank you.
That concludes my interview with Adam Sherry. And once again, folks, next year is going to be a major year for tax planning, good and bad. If you listen to the show that we did last week about some of the implications for Trump's tax plan, now I wanted to cover the estate tax ramifications, because if they get rid of the stepped up basis, there are going to be a lot more people that are going to be impacted by capital gains taxes than there are by getting rid of the estate taxes. So once again, you know, if you haven't updated your estate plan, next year is going to be a major year to do so. And I would encourage you to contact your advisor, because there's great opportunities here to save estate taxes. And there's also opportunities to save on capital gains taxes. All of that because next year is a big, big year in tax law changes, and it's coming, and we'll probably see that in the first part of the year. In the meantime, on behalf of John Leffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.